We're going to open the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. For the record, I'm Greg Smith. Today is Tuesday, March 15th, 2005, and we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 5028, the Oregon State Fair and Exposition Center. With us is Robin Lamont, our subcommittee scheduler and the brains behind the operation here, and then we also have Kat Bell, our subcommittee assistant. Why don't we ask Director Katie Cannon to come on up? Robin, how many days are we here?
We have them on the schedule for 2 days. However, there's no requirement that we go for 2 days if we can wrap them up today.
Perfect. What we're going to go through today is an agency overview, program overview, performance measures, agency priorities, and reductions. Welcome.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Katie Cannon. I'm the director at the Oregon State Fair and Exposition Center.
For the record, I'm Christina Shearer, Department of Administrative Services, Budget and Management.
Well, welcome. Katie, how do you want to proceed forward? Do you want to give us...
Chair, I've had the presentation put together based on the guidelines that were provided to us. I can go through that if you would like and just hit the high points in the presentation. And then if you have questions, then I can stop at any point, or if you want me to change directions, I can do that.
Why don't we do this? Why don't we just have you start, and then as committee members have questions, why don't we just stop and ask them then and there, and then we'll just keep proceeding forward.
Okay. The first item of business is really discussing the Oregon State Fair and Exposition Center mission, which is statutory. There are four items in that particular area. It's to conduct an annual fair, to operate the business and properties of the center, and do all the things necessary to expedite for the full utilization of properties and facilities of the center, to manage the properties and grounds, and to disseminate knowledge concerning and to encourage the growth, prosperity of all agricultural stock raising, horticulture, mining, mechanical, artistic, industrial pursuits in the state, including the raising of animals. We have set forth six-year agency goals that we have I've outlined here. One is to improve the net profit of the fair and exposition center rentals, and to continue to evaluate the organizational structure and operations, and to continue to implement the facility modernization master plan and strategic plan that was developed and approved by the Joint Interim Task Force. We also to develop a nonprofit foundation to assist the agency and to continue to expand statewide partnerships, both private and public, that are mutually beneficial. In addition to this plan, we also have a business plan that we have, but we are in the process of updating that. Going into the history of the State Fair, the formation of the Interim Legislative Task Force occurred in 1999. It was a task force to really look at how to develop the State Fair and make it as financially self-supporting as possible, realizing, though, that with debt service and major maintenance, this organization, like many similar ones, are not able to do that. They set forth four goals: to optimize the use of the state fairgrounds, strengthen the ties to customers and assure statewide value, increase community and business partnerships, and to optimize operation efficiency and improve budgeting procedures. In that, they developed a strategic plan and a facility modernization plan. And the strategic plan really was to implement these four goals. The first goal, to optimize the use of the state fairgrounds, we have fair time, and then we have what we call our other 11 months, which is the exposition facility rental business. In the 5 years that we have, since 2000, since the plan was developed, we have increased the exposition business by 58.4%. What you do need to realize is that the expo rentals generate about 20% of the operating funds for the facility, not the debt service, but just operation. But that particular area generates 85% of our economic impact to the state.
Really quick, on the debt service part, was it, when we passed those a few sessions ago, was there the understanding that the debt service was going to be paid for out of your cash flow?
We had two types of bonds. We had revenue bonds that were issued in 1986, and those have been paid for out of our operating funds. for that period of time, and we retired those in January of 2004 this year.
Okay.
Oh, excuse me, 2005. Thank you. And then the lottery-backed bonds, there were $20.2 million worth of lottery-backed bonds issued, and those, the understanding is the lottery proceeds would be paying for the debt service on those.
Okay, so ticket receipts aren't?
Not on the lottery-backed bonds.
Cash account that you folks generate isn't for the, okay.
Mm-hmm. No. The second task force goal was to strengthen the ties of customers and assure statewide value. We had an economic impact study completed in 1998, and it indicated there was $135 million worth of economic impact that the state fair and the seven largest events generate. Approximately 45% of that total impact is outside of the Marion County area. We hold over about 150 events, so when it only evaluated seven of the largest, we do 150 events, so that's a very conservative estimate. The new pavilion, it's looking at, when it's up at full capacity, it's looking to 10 to 13 million of economic impact into the region. I also want to point out, as far as statewide value, we have RV rallies out there, and we're looking to do more and more of those where they come in. Monaco Motor Coach, for example, will come in and they'll have a rally here. We measured one last year, Bounder, that had 365 units, and we found out how long they stayed in the state before and after the rally and how much money they spent. And those 365 units generated about $900,000 of pure economic impact into the state. This year we're doing 1,800 units, and next year we're doing 3,200 units. So it has a very significant impact. The trade shows that we have at the fairgrounds, it doesn't just impact the Salem area. For example, RV dealers from Lane County sell over $4.5 million worth of new and used RVs. The Hermiston manufactured home manufacturers sell $2 to $3 million worth of new homes at this show. Nonprofit organizations, we have, for example, Benson High School earned over $10,000 to use in extracurricular activities. The Dairy Women, over $50,000 in scholarships. And Dornbecker has received funds from Kiwanis over the last 13 years at about $15,000 per year. We have the educational programs as far as the statewide value is concerned. For example, Marion County does a hand-washing booth, and that may not sound like much, but in the fair business and the agricultural business, enteric diseases are an issue, and they process 55,000 people through that trailer and explain to them about disease prevention and hand-washing. They said that is the maximum. I mean, that's the best place that they can go to reach the maximum number of people is during the annual fair. The Salem Fire Department checked over 15,000 people's blood pressure, and we've collected about $52,000 or 52,000 pounds of food for the Oregon Food Bank. Goal number three was to increase the community and business partnerships. We work very closely with the Salem Convention Visitors Association, bringing those RV rallies in. The 365 unit rally that I had mentioned before brings about $160,000 to $190,000 into the Salem area, and the balance of it really is spent outside of the Salem area. And it appears from the data that they have gone to all seven regions of Oregon. You know, there was a good distribution of all those. Sponsorships is another area where we work with the business community. We have over 30 sponsors during the annual fair. They provide us with cash in-kind and in-kind products and services. For example, Hart's Nursery out of Jefferson actually does all of our plantings, all of our gardens, provides the labor, the plant material, and they do it year-round for us at the state fairgrounds. And for that, we name the garden after them, and we promote Hart's Nursery out at the fair.
Wow.
So it saves a lot of labor for us. Icon is another sponsor. They provide us with all of our coffee machines and all of the paper, well, most of the paper that we use per year. So that's an item that we don't have to purchase because we get it in kind. Non-charitable organizations, I've kind of touched on that, but another one just to let you know that we work with the Agribusiness Council in providing a fundraiser so they can for educational agricultural programs that they work with. We have numerous vendors, contractors, and licensees that come from throughout the state to the state fair. The fourth task force goal was to optimize the operation efficiency and improve budgeting procedures. From 2000 to 2004, revenue expenses tracked very closely with 9/11, the Oregon recession. we've experienced a rapid escalating of expenses. Actually, this should say decreased fair revenue. Last year we had 3 days worth of rain, and we're just finding that people are not having as much money in their pocket, discretionary funds. Actually, our admissions was equal to the year before. But when you look at those extra value, added value things, the people were not paying for those, but they were coming.
Can you talk really quick about how weather affects your gate attendance?
Okay, weather affects our attendance. I mean, Oregonians are pretty tough, but the fact is when you do have rain, last year we had, I remember it was on Tuesday, we had a hearing out there for Senator George, and it rained so hard that you couldn't hear the testimony. That will dampen it, and it depends on when the rain does occur. If it occurs on that last weekend, which is a very strong payday weekend, then that will impact us even greater than if it happens on the first weekend. But last year we had 3 days worth of rain out of 12, so that does make a difference.
Okay. Thank you.
Looking at revenues, we've also budgeted very closely on those, but as you see, it tracked along fairly close until this last year. And then we're finding between the economy with depressed revenues from Fairtime and Expo maybe not going up as fast as what we thought it would with the new pavilion, and then the increased expenses, it is all come together basically in the last year of this biennium. Continuing on, I talked about sponsorships as far as optimizing operation efficiency. Of the $278,000 we get an in-kind sponsorship, about 75% of that is budget relieving. And so we are continuing to go after those. If we can't get cash from a sponsor, we're looking for what products and services can they provide us that we would have to pay for anyway. We also look to do other things. We work with AARP. We are on a work program, and they provide us about 3,500 hours of labor, which we don't pay for. And so once those people end up there for a period of time, then they will go on to other jobs. But it has provided us about 3,500 hours of labor. The inmate labor, we've used inmate labor off and on. Marion County inmate labor was really the one that we have used more, and they are very good. They provide a supervisor, and they provide inmates out there, and for about $400 a day, we get inmates for 10 hours. So that is another way that we're going to continue to reduce temporary labor. We contract out for a variety of products and services during the fair and during the expo events. The service groups that we work with during the fair, for example, last year, the David Douglas School District did all of our ticket taking during the amphitheater in the back. And so with that, we charged people a dollar to get in. That was their fee for collecting the dollar. So we ended up with a count. And that way the $3,000 went to the David Douglas School District to buy library books. We also work with the Optimus they do our food quality evaluation. They get to go out and eat at four different food vendors while they're there, each one of them, and then they give us a rating system. The FFA, we use them extensively in the cleaning of the stalls and also helping the exhibitors move in. And volunteers, we have about 100 volunteers that come back every year that work on setting up and tearing down the particular departments. The task force action, the first action was they developed a strategic plan, and I won't go into detail on that strategic plan, but we do have the summary, and the strategic plan are in the attachments. It's attachment F.
What would prompt someone to come and volunteer to set up, operate, and tear down at the State Fair? I mean, anyone who's set up a booth at the State Fair knows how much work it is.
All right. Chair Smith, members of the committee, people get involved in the fair because they really love it, and they do it. When you think about it, we get 22,000 exhibits there. You have to ask yourself, why do people do that? It's not the money. It's a quality of life, and it's a commitment that these people make. And you'll find that the same volunteers come back to the same departments year after year and set them up. So it really is because they love what they're doing there.
Thank you.
The second task force action was the Facility Modernization Master Plan. and it included five new buildings in the plan, expansion and connection of two existing buildings, refurbishing of two historical buildings, and $13 million of facility infrastructure repair and maintenance. Today, to date, what we have completed with the $20.2 million worth of lottery-backed bonds are we've built three new buildings, which is the multipurpose pavilion, the floral building, and warm-up arena. We've made structural and seismic repairs to the horse stadium and the poultry building, and those two buildings are on the National Register for Historic Places. And we've completed $8 million in repairs. The remaining of the facility master plan takes in $8.2 million in facility and infrastructure repair and maintenance, and $16.8 million in new and expanded facilities, which would be connecting the two buildings, horse stabling, and connectors between the buildings to prevent manure runoff into the drains and sewers for a septic, or excuse me, storm drain, maintenance shops, and an RV park to house the RVers that come there to participate. Any questions at this point?
Do you see the RV park serving as a revenue stream?
Chair Smith, yes, definitely. We have a couple different areas. We have horse shows from March till October. A lot of those people come in fifth wheels and trailers that they do want full service on the grounds. The other thing, too, from October to February, what we have is we fill up the livestock barn with dirt, and we have the only indoor motocross track in the region. So we get people from all over different states coming in.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you. I apologize. Coming from one meeting to another one, I'm arriving late. You talked about RV folks that wanted services on the ground, and then you talked about filling up with dirt to create the motocross track. Has anybody done a fiscal pro forma on that? Do you know you're making money on those activities?
Chair Smith, Senator Johnson, we have looked at individual events, mainly individual buildings, that because we don't have some things broken out, so we have to do like a sample on those various things. I would say, for example, on the motocross, definitely we're making money because once we set that and he does most of the work, we just charge rent.
I want to come back to that in just a second. I guess, Katie, what I'm struggling with is I'm now entering my third term in the legislature, and each time we've heard we're just around the corner from turning things around. I've sat in meetings where all kinds of suggestions have been given, and I don't really have a clear handle on the follow-up. But what I'm looking from you as the manager is, to what degree do you have a handle on your fiscal performance? The fact that you don't know if a certain event, because you're not tracking it, makes money. I'd want to know that I wasn't selling below cost and trying to make it up in volume when I had a bunch of RVs come in. You know what your fixed costs are, at least you should. You know what the revenue is from these folks coming in, and I presume they pay for the space, they pay for the water, they pay for whatever else.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have the financial detail that could show this committee that you're making your costs?
Chair Smith, Senator Johnson, in certain areas, yes, I can do that. I cannot do it in all areas. Let me give you an example. If you talk about fixed costs, if we start looking at utility costs, I don't have meters on every individual building. And so with that, I would have to estimate, and I really don't know, because I may have several buildings connected together. If I go in and look at for example, small one-day events versus a three-day event, I've gone in and done those measures. And in some of the newer buildings, I do have that data.
Can you bring it to us?
Let me ask let me make sure I'm clear at what you want. Do you want me, I do 160 events there.
Mr. Chair.
Please.
What I want, Katie, is to not sit here in this committee and parse with you. I would like the format that you use to see if you're covering your costs. And I'm not asking you to do a half-day event, but I think that this panel, your board, your partner fairs would like to see some demonstration that there's a handle on the costs, and I'm looking for a representative worksheet that tells me if a big event that you're relying heavily on for income makes that you cover your costs. And I'm really just looking for a demonstration that such fiscal discipline and methodology exist. Right now, I'm unwilling, with the losses that the fair continues to sustain, to simply be reassured that we've got a handle on our costs. I'd like to see the mechanisms by which you track your costs and the commensurate revenue to make sure that we're running events out there at a profit, not just somebody's guess that we had a lot more trailers than we did last year looks good to us. Am I specific enough that...
Chair Smith, Senator Johnson, I think what I can do is go through and get you some specific examples to do that and explain to you how we measure the cost and what are some of the weak areas that we do not have specific measures and where we do have specific measures.
Why don't we do this? It would be a good case study for all of us. As I drive by every morning, I see the different events that are soon to be in town, and I see the Arabian horses are going to be in town. Maybe you could come and share with us the expenses associated to the state fair with having that event, and then perhaps bring to us at the same time the revenue that you anticipate generating off of that event, and maybe walking through the committee how that works. Show us the cash flow, the daily or the weekend cash flow, how that plays out. Representative Richardson.
Mr. Chair, may I suggest that she not only just do that with anticipated, because anticipation is a guess. How about if this is an annual event, how about last time they did it, so that we can see what the actuals were?
Mr. Chair, by your leave, the only way that I would condition this is the Arabian Horse Show might not be a biggie, but I have heard you repeatedly talk about this RV show. Or different aspects of some of those kinds of shows. I agree completely with my colleague from Central Point. Let's take one that's passed and bring in the fiscal performance and show us your methodology for assuring that you're making money on these events.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Representative Avakian.
I'd like to add to that request as well. I think it's extremely important for you to show the financial viability of what you're doing. At the same time, I think my committee would agree that there are many things we do in this state that we don't do in order to turn a profit. If there was, our education system and our healthcare system would probably be out the window. So with that, if some of your examples don't show a profit, I think that we would like to have an explanation of what the value was to Oregonians in the continuation of that program.
This has been a very good discussion.
Moving on to the programs and the fair's purpose. The purpose of the fair is to disseminate the knowledge concerning and to encourage the growth and prosperity of all agricultural, stock raising, horticulture, mining, mechanical, artistic, industrial pursuits in the state, including the raising of animals. In the past, we have earned approximately 90% of the fair's total operating revenues that use not the debt service, but what it takes us to operate. And for every dollar that's been invested in state general fund money, we have earned $9. In looking at that, we've been asked to kind of divide it out as far as primary and secondary. And I do want to explain to the committee how we've approached this. Because of some of the questions that Senator Johnson has asked us, and the fact that we are really looked towards to produce as much money as we can, we have put revenue generation and also safety and health as number one priorities, and that's how we looked at the fair. And then the secondary really is the mission, because without being able to do the first two, I'm unable to do the secondary functions. And those tend to be more of your open classes and exhibits. And the target groups that we target are youth, exhibitors, Oregon industries and businesses, nonprofit, charitable organizations, and fair guests. How the fair benefits Oregon. For example, in the youth area, we have over 50% of our exhibitors are Oregonians under the age of 18. And so you need to, if you've ever been in contact with these 4-H and FFA kids, you'll realize that those are leadership programs. They may be based in agriculture, but they really do develop leaders. And so we are developing Oregon's future leaders. The exhibitors, as I had mentioned before, we have 22,000 exhibits there. And you have to ask yourself, why do people do that? Because it's not because it's not the pay, and it does take some real effort to get exhibits to the fair and get them entered in return. So it really is a quality of life issue. Oregon businesses, we have during fair 227 commercial exhibitors that are from Oregon, 19 food vendors, and one very large carnival. Just the food vendors and the carnival alone gross over $3.4 million in revenue, and 71% of that being earned by those businesses are headquartered outside of Salem. So it's not the Salem businesses that are receiving this money. It tends to be other businesses outside of the Salem area.
Would it be possible, let me direct this question to Robin actually, would it be possible to determine the amount of general fund, or excuse me, income tax dollars that are generated as a result of this work? So that way we can see, you know, how much general fund is being created by this activity versus what the state puts into it.
Chair Smith, if I may, I have actually gone to the Legislative Revenue Department and asked them that. I have given them our three economic impact studies to see. I know that they are extremely busy right now, and so she said she would try to get that information so I can check and see where they are on that.
And I think that goes back to what Representative Avakian was saying, and that is, you know, yes, we expect revenue to be generated, but at the same time, there's other benefits to the state of Oregon from cultural, social, et cetera. But I think one of the things we also need to take into consideration is what general fund revenue mm-hmm. are you also creating for the state mm-hmm. In terms of the tertiary activities that go on. With that committee, I'm going to pass the gavel to Representative Richards, and I need to leave for about 20 minutes, and then I will be back.
So we'll continue.
I also looked at the top 12 businesses that we pay for services and products for the state fair, and there was about $1 million that we pay out. And over 60% of those payments went to the Portland Tri-County area, 24% went to Salem businesses, and the remainder went to the Willamette Valley. On nonprofit organizations, we have, for example, 5 Oregon schools, 4 of which are in Portland, earned over $52,000 last year for various extracurricular activities and, as I had mentioned before, to purchase books for a library.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. Representative Falk, you went through the percentages fast enough I didn't track it when you were talking about how many went to Tri-County businesses and Salem and Willamette Valley. I didn't add it up. Does that mean that there's nobody outside the Willamette Valley that is a provider of services to the fair? And if that's true, I'm curious why.
Representative Avakian, actually, I would say it's one thing is a distance. You know, for them to come and provide services here, it's probably more costly for somebody from Burns to come in and provide services. And I'm only talking about the top 12. There may be smaller businesses that have provided services to us outside of that valley. These are only the top 12. So they are the larger ones.
I understand. Thank you.
There was over $85,000 per year that's earned by nonprofits for programs benefiting youth such as scholarships, Girl Scouts, Boys and Girls Club, and Dornbecker's. The FFA clubs earned over $24,000 a year to send their kids to state and national FFA conventions. If you look at our fair guests, we get over 400 fair guests and participants that experience the state fair annually. And this is a way that we find out that there are still pretty strong family units that are coming to the fair. They're not, you know, coming alone. We are very representative of the state as a whole as far as the demographics are concerned. Economic impact, I'll just kind of briefly go over this because we talked about it. In general, of the $135 million of economic impact, about 15% comes from the state fair. And as I had mentioned, it comes from the, you know, some of the businesses in Portland and elsewhere that generate revenue here, or we pay out to them for products and services. And over 73% of the vendors, the commercial vendors that come to the fair, are from cities other than Salem. In the exposition rental area, that is the purpose there is to operate the business and properties of the Oregon State Fair and Exposition Center and do all the things necessary to expedite the full utilization and properties of the facilities in the center. The targets there are youth groups and activities, Oregon businesses, event promoters, entertainment and learning endeavors, and the customers, participants, and guests that partake in these events. There, as I had mentioned before, we do about 150 events over the 11-month period. I have broken them out to the type of event and then also looked at how they draw. Do they draw just from the local area? Do they draw from Oregon? Do they draw from out of state? And as we're seeing, this was calendar year 2004, we're doing more and more of the ones where they're drawing from out of state with these RV rallies. The real economic impact from the state fair really comes in these exposition events. And as remember, I had mentioned this is only the seven largest events, and we do 150. But we're looking at about $115 million in economic impact, or 85% of the total. I won't go over the RV rallies again. I just to let you know, 90% of those people that went to the rally were from out of state. And they stayed an average of 20 days, and that was in the fall. So I think the rallies that we're going to have in the summer will find that they're going to stay even longer. And the Manufactured Home Show is another example. They do about $19 to $28 million worth of sales at the time that they're at the state fair. One event, and some of you may have actually attended this event, we had the Oregon School Athletic Association had the state wrestling championships there. We had 900 kids competing from all over the state, and there was as many as 6,000 people, participants there watching the kids. It was really a very fun event, and they were quite happy too, because this was the first place that they've been that they could actually have their RVs, and so it made it very economical for families to come in and participate. In the performance measure area, we've had in the past three performance measures that were revenue based. And they dealt with fair time revenue, expo revenue, and then the cash balances. We've also been asked to put together some additional outcome measures, and I've actually just listed those on page 19 for discussion purposes. It combines those three economic ones, the exposition facility rental, the fair's net revenue, and which I have actually changed. That used to be just revenue, but I think we need to look at the net revenue, because as expenses keep coming up, especially the ones that are not generating revenue, and the revenue is softening because of the economy, it's very, very difficult. So I would rather measure that if that's appropriate. And then the March ending fund balance, so lots of times in budgets we look at the June ending fund balance. For us, that's probably a time that we're at least moderately flush with cash, and that our lowest point is usually January, February, March. In the year-round facility utilization, I wanted to look, and it kind of may help address some of the things that Senator Johnson was talking about, looking at the total, not only the total exposition events per year, but the total building use, because we know as we have more events for multiple days that we do make more money on those, because we've already got the setup work done, and then we just charge them by the day based on their usage. To measure our value to Oregon, we would look probably, we have some market research data that we look at overall value rating and then also the customer service ratings there. And the last item is in the health and safety area. We ask the perception of the fair guest is how they feel about the safety of their family and friends when they come there. And actually that's received a very high rating for the last 5 years. But we feel that that's essential, because if you don't have a safe event, if it's a place where you have crime or if you're a place that you have disease, it doesn't make any difference what else you do. They won't come.
I have a question on comparisons with our state fair and the way we're operating and so forth with other state fairs in the Northwest region. Do you have any of that data?
I wouldn't say I have data, excuse me, Representative Richardson, in my head, but what I do know is that we did, I think, Robin, you can help me here. In 2000, there was some research that was done on all the fairs, state fairs in the United States, and they did find that most of those fairs, with very few exceptions, did receive some subsidy, operational subsidy and facility subsidy. There probably one in the Northwest, one of the fairs that would be contrary to that would be the Puyallup Fair, that since I think even from its origin, it was a private fair. But they have had tremendous success, and they're also in a very large market. But all the others are somewhat governmental connected. In Idaho and California, I think Washington is the exception, and there are very few of those private fairs in the United States.
Can you provide us with data so we can compare?
Representative Richardson, I will. The data that we have that is several years old, I don't have anything updated. It would take me a bit of time, but I would be more than willing to do that.
Well, I don't want to cause you to go to a lot of extra trouble. I would assume that there's some periodical or something that does state fairs. I mean, there must be some organization, some journal, some association that has information for state fairs.
Representative Richardson, that is correct. The International Fairs Association. Let me make sure I understand exactly what you want. So you want to know how they are operated, how they're funded?
Well, not really in depth. I want to know, it wouldn't hurt to know what their budget is, whether they're making money or to what extent they're subsidized. Just a benchmark so that we could have additional comparisons to know how Oregon's doing compared to our neighbors.
Just a point of clarification. I think that data probably, I think Katie can probably pull that data together. But I would point out that there really isn't any Northwest or, West Coast fair that's comparable to the Oregon State Fair. For example, California, if I recall, has I'm not sure whether it's a car or a horse racing track on it that generates a great deal of revenue. Each of the fairs has some difference. But I think she.
Well, that could be set forth, if there's a problem.
Right. Representative Richardson, what I'll do is I will, really how they're subsidized, that will be a key component of that. Of their overall budget, how much is subsidized from government or other sources. And Robin is correct. They have a racetrack, and they get a percentage of the paramutual handles.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Katie, I know that we spent a lot of time in the past couple of sessions looking at best business practices for county fairs, and we made a big investment in them. And I think that there is a good board doing oversight. What I'm trying to look at, rather than the apples-to-apples comparison, while I agree with the chair that would be valuable, I'm looking for some evidence that you have used the very capable people on your board to have any kind of policy discussion about a different management model. This is now the third session that I've heard, if we're going to have a state fair, it needs to be subsidized. And given that we have a structural problem with our budget, I'm trying to figure out, we're asking lots of other agencies, lots of other folks to do business differently to get different outcomes. What evidence suggests that you've engaged your board in the policy discussion of, should we do this differently? You said that there's a private fair in Puyallup that has been very successful. What's instructive about that success? Have we looked at turning this whole fair over to a private management association, for example, to see whether or not they could turn a different result? Because the results here are not positive, and I'm just trying to figure out, are you engaged at any level with others to talk about doing anything differently structurally, or is it just we have to be underwritten to survive?
Chair Richardson, Senator Johnson, we have not entered into those discussions at this point. There, up until the last fair, we did not, there wasn't really the urgency at that point to do that. We can do that in the future. And I can sit down with my commission, which is advisory, and see what they have in what they would like to explore.
Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Why the heavy emphasis on advisory?
Well, what I, Chair Richardson, Senator Johnson, I just want to make sure that there's not really any emphasis, but I do want to make it clear that it is a, not a policy-making board like you have in others, but they have been very good about working with us on policy. I just wanted to make sure that you're aware of that.
Well, I am, but they're there to advise you. They are the reflection of the public. And I'm interested in probing a little deeper on how well you've utilized them. We're going to end up at the end of this session disappointing people when they walk out of here. And in trying to figure out, because we're unable to fund everything we have need for. At the end of the day, if we fund you, I want a really good rationale why I'm telling an elderly senior I can't help her with prescription relief. And I'm just looking for every shred of evidence other than just this is how we've done it, this is what we need to have a fair. I'm looking for every shred of evidence that is indicative of figuring out a way out of subsidizing this fair.
Chair Richardson, Senator Johnson, if I would be more than willing to sit down with my commission. If we are looking for sound conclusions in a very short period of time, I don't know that I can deliver that. I mean, we can come up with some various models by some of the evaluations that we would do with other fairs. I would be more than willing to do that. But if you want me to come back in 2 weeks and say I found this magic model to take this fair in a positive direction with the economy the way it is, I don't know that I can give you that answer, but I can explore those various options.
That would be excellent. But of course, no one's asking for a miracle, but you know, you referred to 20% of the annual revenues coming from interim, non-state fair, and that has 85% of the economic impact. Well, that's actually a quote from the 1998, May of 98, Atkinson Graduate School Management Economic Impact Analysis mm-hmm. for the Oregon State Fair and Exposition Center. So that's 7 years ago. And then you also included in your information a June 2000 Joint Interim Task Force on Oregon State Fair, which is 5 years ago. And so much of what you've been presenting is what is it contained in these two documents. And so it's a fair question. You know, the most recent one mm-hmm. 5 years ago and the other one 7 years ago. What in the last year, what in the last 18 months has taken place to put us in a direction that we weren't already on in May of 1998? Because it wasn't working then, and it wasn't working in June of 2000, and it's still not working. And so, you know, if we keep doing what we've been doing, we get what we've been getting. And so we're just asking if there is a plan that's being worked on to change the outcome so that we can increase revenue.
And if I could nuance that slightly more, to be proactive in looking at changing market conditions. You have a new convention center downtown, and I know that you appeal to different markets in the main. But there undoubtedly are people that have historically used your facility who may be tempted away by a new venue downtown. Have you discussed any liabilities to the state fair as a result of the opening of the new Salem Convention Center?
Chair Richardson, Senator Johnson, have I discussed the...
Have you thought about it, worked with your board, talked to your staff, tried to assess market, tried to look at your customers, tried to anticipate who might be siphoned away, who you thought was a safe customer?
Shored up.
Yeah. Chair Richardson, Senator Johnson, yes, we have. We've developed a marketing plan for the pavilion itself. And also, we have one for the exposition event rentals. We did look at some of the events that they may take away from us. We've also taken some away from some of the other people, the other venues here in town. But we are looking, and we realize in some areas, probably very small areas, we are competition. And so we're going after those very aggressively.
Well, certainly the increase in the number of RV individuals that will be involved, in RV events is something that can't be duplicated elsewhere. And if those are profit-making, then certainly that would be useful. And that goes back to whether or not they are generating a profit.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Morris.
Thank you. Katie, have you done any financial analysis that looks at your fixed costs, your variable costs, and then looks at the elasticity of the pricing in your markets that you serve to determine the right pricing point to get your volume up to cover those fixed costs? Sometimes you can charge less and have a greater cash flow, and I'm curious as to what kind of analysis you might have done in that regard.
Chair Richardson, Senator Morris, what first of all we started with was a 10-year pricing plan. We went through all of our facilities. We looked at competitive pricing out in the area, and then we established pricing for the various buildings, and we looked not only just the pricing with competition, but pricing within our complex itself, because our goal, for example, with a pavilion was not to cannibalize our other facilities and just shift the business from one to the other. So we first started with that, and we looked at, we sampled some of the events that we had on, especially the smaller events, that, for example, a one-day event, and we looked those that we could meter and we could check, because we don't do cost accounting, and I may have an employee that works in three different buildings on three different events all in the same day. But so what we did is we tried to capture those and look at whether they were profitable at a day, profitable at 3 days on the smaller events. And so we have looked at several of those things. We definitely look at the market and what the market is charging out there and what our competition is.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, also as part of the emergency board response to the crisis, the most recent crisis, the fair was directed to have a consultant look at revenue options. And the report that came back pretty clearly indicated that the fair doesn't have much room, if any, to be adjusting pricing upwards at this point. As a matter of fact, a major problem is that fairgoers are rating the fair as being too expensive. So the options, the revenue, the options for adjusting fees upwards in order to capture more revenue is very limited at best.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Senator Morris.
Thank you, Robin. The intent of my question was to take pricing the other way. And if you look at, the fixed costs, the debt service, things that just go on, whether it's vacant or occupied, and how we can get better coverage, sometimes reducing prices will stimulate you. And you still may be in a negative earnings position, but you generate more than you would otherwise. And I, just one question, follow-up question, is do we understand what the vacancy rate is of the other competing facilities? For example, you know, Linn County has a wonderful fair and exposition center, and, you know, that would give you a pretty good idea of just how big a problem this is if you've got high vacancy rates throughout all of the fairgrounds, you know, the exposition centers, convention centers that we compete against. It would give us a little better idea of just what we are facing.
Mm-hmm. Redmond would pay for them.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to ask a question of you. And, you know, this is a state fair, and we're the state legislature, and are there things that we ought to be doing to help your job be better for you? I mean, you know, this it's kind of a one-sided thing, and we're asking for all these answers, and maybe there's an inherent weakness in the way things are organized or something that is making it very difficult for you to accomplish the goals that are placed on your shoulders. We'd be open for any requests or suggestions you might have, things that we might be able to do to make it more successful.
Chair Richardson, members of the committee, in some respects, what you're asking us to do is operate as a private business, but under the constraints of a state agency. Let me just give you an example. We have our pricing. We have to put our pricing out in July each year for the pricing the next year. I have to have a basis for going in and reducing that price. I can't just arbitrarily sit down and negotiate and say, well, you know, Joe, you've been here for a lot of years, and so, you know, we'll give you a little better price on that. I have to literally stick to that pricing based on administrative rule, and I don't have as much flexibility as what you would have in private business or even a conference center that is not governmental managed. So some of the things that you're asking me to do is to really work as a private business but act as a state agency.
Mm-hmm. Okay, in addition to the pricing difficulties, are there other things that come to your mind that are tying your hands?
Chair Richardson, there are probably other things that would, you know, not having this business in private and then moving it into state government, for me to compare what it would cost to operate this business as a private entity, you know, some of the overhead costs, I'm sure, are, you know, I may be able to do them cheaper, but some of the things I may not. And I don't know that I can answer that right off the top of my head.
Give that some thought, if you will.
Mr. Chair.
Senator.
You know, I know this is a ways and means process, but I think what we ought to look at here is the change, not in the way the fair has been organized, but in what has happened to society. The fair used to be the social outing for the family, and everybody came and everybody participated. Now, what Katie is fighting and what the county fairs and many of the counties are fighting is that parents are working. They don't participate in 4-H and FFA. The children are not brought to the fair, and yet the ones that participate are really getting a lot out of it. And I just made a little list. This is just things that I know. We're a fair family. We're fair participants. We're fair sponsors. We sponsor the rodeo in Coos County every year. But a few observations. Winning the blue ribbon on your jam. The best to show for your rabbit. A red ribbon on your African. Having your family watch while you give the award-winning speech at the 4-H competition. Showing the out-of-staters, all the county's brag booths, all of these volunteers that come to your fair every year, set up their brag booth about their county. I go around and look at all the different counties and learn a lot that I didn't know before I got there. And I guess I'd take off on the old TV ad, you know, that's fair life, and for everything else is MasterCard. So I think what we're trying to ascertain here is whether we want to try to help maintain that structure in Oregon. Ever since I've been in the legislature, there's been an attack on county fairs. I didn't know anybody attacked the county fair. I thought that was like motherhood and apple pie till I came to Salem. And when I first heard that kind of conversation about county fairs, I thought, my goodness. And then I asked, did you go to the county fair? No. Never been to a county fair. So I think that there are a group of people in this world that are going to participate. And your numbers have been falling. As far as people, so you've had to diversify. You've had to go to all of these other things that I've not been familiar with, motocross and different kinds of activities, trying to sustain yourself. But there is a basic premise here of whether we feel that Oregon as a state wants to maintain county fairs and a fair at the state level that encourages competition among our students and 4-H students and people to come and to do the things that we've always done historically, but maybe we don't want to do it anymore. And being a fair participant and a big supporter of fairs at every level, I would want to argue to find a way that we can weather the cyclical thing, because I think we'll come back to the good basics of what fairs actually offer to families. And right now, the dollars and cents are hard to pan out. What? She can't bring in the big names anymore. At the state fair, I used to, the Gatlin brothers, the girl, I can't even think of their names now, the girls that came, these people became famous. I don't remember if I saw Loretta Lynn, I may have, but these people became famous. We walked on the fairgrounds and sat down in the sunshine, and they were up on the stage.
Well, see, I was good with you until you
those
mentioned
those days were over.
Until you mentioned the county brag booths and knowing that Morrow County took second place to Polk County, and I'm absolutely convinced there's a conspiracy because Polk County seems to win it every year. And so, anyway, Senator Berger, your point's exactly right on task. We as a body are going to have to determine not only the fiscal issues associated with the fair, but also the social value to the state, and we as a committee will have to work through that. Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chair, there has to be a way, though, I think, to quantify that. It mm-hmm. can't be, and I, too, am a fair person. I was going to give up politics last year and be a shepherd. I bought so many 4-H animals. But some level of analysis, not just a kind of sepia-toned look backwards into what was. And I think that there's a differentiation between the county fairs, some of which are extraordinarily successful in terms of not only their own revenues, but the trickle-out factor to the communities where they're located. If we're not a fair at the state level anymore, with heavy emphasis on animal showmanship and the rest of that, but we're an RV, some level of market analysis may speak to that. And Ms. Lamont made reference to a consultant's report. With the chair's permission, if that consultant's report is instructive to the committee, that might be something that we could all take a look at and benefit from the expertise rendered by the professional.
You bet. So I'm actually going to turn to Representative Richardson. I had to be out of the room for 30 minutes. Perhaps he could tell us where we are and what we need to do next.
Actually, we're ready just to continue. And
looking at the agency priority list, as I had mentioned before, we had to find some systematic way to approach this. The safety and so we divided it into three categories, safety and health, because if you don't have that, I don't care what you've done, you know, in all the other areas. People won't come. And then because we have been so strongly supported by our own other funds, is that we needed to look at revenue generation. And then lastly, but not least, is the statutory mission, which these are the core programming, and this is the prize animal coming to the fair, and it is the essence of the fair. But if you want me to be as self-supporting as I can, I have to look at the other two first. And so with that, in from the fair, 70% of the total revenue that we generate comes from the fair operation. And 58% of the estimated expense in the governor's recommended budget really goes towards the fair operation. And then, as I mentioned, 15% of the economic impact comes from that. If you look at primary, and that's all the things that generate revenue, health, and safety, such as the carnival, commercial exhibits, food, basic operation departments, basically a festival. And those primary activities generate about 77% of the total fair revenue, but they only generate 60% of the expenses.
Can you say that one more time?
The areas that we look at for revenue and health and safety generate 77% of the fair revenue. The carnival, for example, food vendors, commercial exhibitors, that's where our money comes in. Now, if you take what I call the secondary way. What you have is a festival. You have the Portland Riverfront, okay? And you have a carnival, and you have exhibits, and you have entertainment, and you have those sorts of things. That generates 77% of the revenue, but 60% of the expenses. If I look at the secondary priority in FAIR, which is really your mission statement, which is the education, you know, disseminating knowledge, the competitive exhibits, the 4-H and FFA, you're looking at 23% of the FAIR time revenue. Now, when I say that, I have to tell you, those are things that I directly can attribute to revenue coming in to those departments. Let's say it's the chickens and it's the entry fees. Now, I have no way of saying that if I get rid of the chickens, that my physician who talks to me every time I come in about when are the chickens going to be at the fair, because that's the only day she wants to come, I can't tell you what revenue I will lose if I get rid of these. But I can tell you from what we've looked at, 23% of the revenue comes from that aspect of the fair and 40% of the expenses.
Mr. Chair, really quick, Representative Richardson.
Katie, of course, nobody is asking you to get rid of those. If you did get rid of those, the whole thing gets shut down. The justification with myself and many of my colleagues for maintaining the state fair at all is the fact that the county fairs, the 4-H, the youth, they prize so much the opportunity to come. And so it's really about how do you, you know, maximize the effectiveness of the secondary and maximize the opportunity of the primary, mm-hmm. because it has to make up so much for right. the cost of the secondary.
Right. Right.
Senator Johnson?
I'm just trying to understand your definitions. You're calling secondary what you are required in statute to do?
What I was, Chair Smith and Senator Johnson, what I was asked and instructed to do was take my entire program and prioritize it. And so in order for me to do that, I needed to have some kind of criteria to do it. And I looked at it, and maybe I shouldn't have called it secondary, but the second phase of the fair, I needed to first look at what are those things that I do that can help financially support it, because that seems to be where the emphasis is here, and the health and safety. Those had to be my two highest priorities based on the direction that I've had for the last 4 years. And so then the secondary is the third element, which to me is still extremely important, but I have to do the first two in order to achieve the third one, the third part, or the second part on the secondary.
Well, I was just trying to understand, because in looking at secondary, I presume you've got revenue opportunities in here. The open class departments, 4-H, FFA, those guys have to cover their costs.
Chair Smith, Senator Johnson, that is not the case. The entry fees do not cover their costs. If you look at just the open class departments, for what I bring in entry fees and anything else that may come in, and what I know that I have to spend out, because those are broken out by PCA, that it's about...
And what's a PCA?
It's an accounting line, okay? And so, like, the small animal has their own PCA, and then all the costs and revenue go into that line, okay? So if I look at that, and if I total those up, I have to spend about $400,000 to $450,000 more a year in addition to what the revenue that they bring in to operate those departments. Now, that's only the direct expenses. That doesn't count. I haven't taken my people that clean the restrooms and that pick up the garbage and do the setup and split them out by department, because they may be working all over the fairgrounds. So this is only the direct expenses.
Then if I'm understanding, Mr. Chair, what you're saying, you are going to have continuing losses, that your revenues cannot cover your expenses, ever.
Representative Smith, Senator Johnson, if you want a fair, not a festival, and we're just talking about the fair end at this point, the things that what I have been told in the past are important which are those mission things, the open class departments, they are never going to be self-supporting.
Follow up.
Those are the important things, yet they're listed as secondary. They're prioritized lower than your primary definition because primary is your revenue? I mean, I'm just trying to understand the nomenclature here.
Chair Smith, Senator Johnson,
thank you.
All I'm saying is that I needed to prioritize those. The emphasis has been for the last 4 years on the financial. And so I needed to set that as a priority because I cannot pay for the secondary things unless I have those things in place. So if we, let's say we switched them around and I said, okay, the revenue aspects are on the bottom of the list. And if we're going to start cutting things out, we're going to start at the bottom of the list and work up. Then I have cut out my carnival that brings in a lot of my revenue. I cut out my commercial exhibitors, and then I can't afford to pay for those other items.
One more question, Mr. Chair. Sure. Do you have records that show the cost of the carnival versus the revenues? You know the carnival is a moneymaker.
Chair Smith, Senator Johnson, yes, I do.
Would it be possible, I need a little historical information here. At some point, I assume the fair was profitable. Or self-supporting?
Well,
or has it never been self-supporting?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, let me give you a little bit of background if that would help. There was an assumption made in the early 80s that the fair could be self-sufficient and could generate sufficient resources to maintain itself through its revenues, the revenues that it generated. And the fair operated on that assumption until about 1995, when it became painfully clear that what the fair had done was it was not generating sufficient revenue to operate and maintain its facilities. And the physical plant at the fair became disgraceful. I don't think there's any other word for it. It was crumbling. There were, you know, things falling off from walls. It was really quite dreadful. And at about the same time, the fair began to experience an inability to generate enough revenue to meet its operating expenses as well as to maintain its facilities. And at that point, the legislature stepped in and did a study and basically put in front of itself the question, do we want to have a state fair? And if we do, what should it look like? And the legislature looked at things like privatization and other options. One of the reasons that the option, for example, of privatization was discarded was the amount of services that the fair receives without direct cost to it by being part of a state agency and some of the costs that it avoids, such as taxes. And at that point, when that decision was made, that's when the legislature chose to invest in the fair with lottery-backed bonds for both facility renovation and began providing a general fund subsidy that was explicitly for what Katie is defining as the secondary items. That is, there was an understanding that these high-priority items do not generate revenue, but are core to the mission of the fair itself.
Historically, has there been a time, though, where the legislature has not had to inject general fund or lottery into it?
Yes, Mr. Chair. The period between 1980 and 1995. And that's the period during which the fair continued to not have sufficient revenues to invest in their facilities.
And so they were cash flowing, but they weren't reinvesting and taking care of the facility.
That's correct.
Okay, so and I don't want to, I just want to be clear here. So it wasn't technically able to cash flow itself. It was able to keep the lights on. It was able to keep the payroll met, but it didn't have adequate cash flow to paint the buildings and to get new garbage cans.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a fair assessment?
Chair Smith, yes. Yes, because what you had to choose from was do I paint the building or do I put on the fair?
So then I'm going to step back a step further and say if we don't have a point in time in history where the state fair has been able to meet its payroll, take care of its utilities, do all that, and keep the facility maintained, why do we think we can do it today?
And that's her question.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I do want to remind you that the legislature has been providing a general fund subsidy for this agency ever since, I think, 1999 or maybe 1995.
97.
So what if this committee, and now the committee said, this is the type of information we want to see every biennium, and we helped spell out the type of information we're looking for, and provide that direction to you folks. I mean, I guess I'm struggling here. I don't know how you get a state agency that is going to have to come to us for support to expect them to step up and not have the support. And so I guess what my take is on this, maybe I'm missing something, is I want to make sure we have the information we as a committee need to make good decisions to help provide the oversight that we need to, but I don't want to ask them to be able to produce something that they're incapable of producing.
Mr. Chair, if I could clarify just one item, Katie was going to get into this. The issue really that's in front of this committee at this point in time is not the subsidy per se. It's the fact that the subsidy is going to have to be tripled in order for them to continue to operate. That's really where I think is the basis of some of the concern on the part of members of this committee, that the gap between their revenue and their operating expenses has continued to grow and is now becoming a significant general fund investment.
And I guess what I would like to see is a cash flow so we can see why it's tripling, and then we as a committee can decide the merits of going with the additional support or not. Senator Berger, then Senator.
I think that there is no doubt that this is a cyclical thing and that the state fair is somewhat waning in popularity. I wouldn't argue against that at all. I think her numbers will reflect that if you took just the fair itself and not all of these other diversified things. So I think there is a larger question here of whether we want to try to ride out the tide, or can we afford to ride out the tide?
Mm-hmm.
And if so, how? And I know some families that have been consistent fairgoers that did not go to the last fair because it was beyond their ability to pay for a good-sized family. And you see, that's another thing that we're losing. The whole idea of the fair is to be able to take the family at a reasonable cost and to enjoy the fair. But by the time you pay the entry fee, and then you have to pay for carnival rides, and a lot of families can't afford it. So I think that the reality here is that we are faced with a serious problem. And I think it's just whether we're going to try to figure it out and ride it out for the sake of what I believe philosophically is good rural Oregon, and that's what I see. And that rises to the state level, you understand. They all aspire to win so they can go to the state. But I don't know, and I'd like to hear what Kathy has to say. I mean, she's the one that's in the battle on the front lines and has done a super job.
Well, let's go to Senator Morris next, and then we'll hear.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would it be possible to provide us with your actual operating financial statements? Do you have balance sheets? Do you have income statements by the month, by the quarter, by the year, year to date? I mean, this data doesn't. It's helpful in background, but it's not helpful in particular insights to how the fair is truly operating.
Chair Smith, Senator Morris, what we do have, one is the state accounting system records, okay, those statements. And then we also have, I put together a monthly cash flow. So I know what my cash flow is, and I have that to the point where I can look out 2 and 4 years down the road. So if I do something today, what does it do down the road? And if you want further breakout on those cash flows, we do have the breakout on the expenses that are in there. But that is, with the state accounting system, what we've been able to use is the cash flow.
Follow this chair. Do you have a fiscal year end 05 financial statement?
Chair Smith, Senator Morris, we have not a fiscal year 05.
I meant calendar year, not fiscal year would be June 30th.
Right.
But, or whatever your cycle is. If you have the last complete annual cycle, do you have a financial statement that tells you what you did at that point in time of June 30th of 04?
Chair Smith, Senator Morris, yes, we do have a financial year-end statement that is that we've had because of the revenue bonds that we have put together that statement, and I can get that to you.
That would be helpful, at least to understand what you look at for financial statements and see what insights we might have. The other, just as a follow-up, the other issue that you raised, you know, you are a state agency, but yet you're in a market-driven business that is highly competitive. Now, you're competing against other government entities, but not totally. And I'd like to follow up on Senator Johnson's suggestions, I think it was, or whoever it was. What can you recommend to us that changes this paradigm, fundamentally changes the paradigm, and lessens the amount of hemorrhage that we have?
Do we want to go to Representative Avakian, and then
Sure. We'll
have answers to these questions?
And I'll have a direct question that piggybacks on Senator Verger's comment and harkens back to what I said earlier, but I'm going to want you to address it. We've asked you for various types of financial information which you're going to provide, and an analysis will be done on your ability to be self-sufficient. But you've said, and some of the committee members have, projected that may not be possible given the current structure. Related to what I said earlier, there are some pieces of the state government that we simply do not expect to turn a profit. For instance, I would not, and I think most of my colleagues would agree, ask McKinley Elementary School to turn a profit or not receive state funds. And we do that because there's some intrinsic value to public education that deems us to not dictate that they turn a profit. What I would like you to address, and take a few minutes to do so, and I would like you to feel free to step outside the financial analysis of what we've been given, I want to know what the value is in the state fair to Oregonians that would justify your existence whether or not you turn a profit. And feel free to address things such as the 4-H clubs, such as leadership and responsibility programs, such as the agricultural identity that this state continues to hold on to in rural communities, primarily because of the state fair. Address those type of intrinsic values that the fair might have that justify its existence.
Chair Smith, Representative Vakian, are you asking me right on the spot to do all that at this point or come back with it?
Would you like to come back with it?
I think it might be. I mean, I can probably start just rattling off things that if you want me to do that, I can do it. If you want me to be organized and make sure I've evaluated everything, I can do that too, however you would like it.
Well, since I kind of gave the speech already, why don't you follow it up with something nice, okay?
Okay.
Any other questions? Why don't we keep proceeding forward?
Okay. On the exposition facility rental program, when I had to prioritize things, then I had to look at the fact that brings in 20% of my revenue. And so I put that on the bottom of the priority list. I do want to make a point here, too, that so we don't forget something. When we built the exposition facility rental program, we were moving along, renting the facilities out. When I came back in 2000, actually, they didn't have anybody renting the facilities directly, soliciting rentals. So we started doing that, and we've increased the business. Well, when we decided to go with the pavilion and build that pavilion, it is like starting a small business all into itself. Mm-hmm. And I had warned several people and, you know, really on this committee that I've been in front of before that the first 2 years of that pavilion were very critical because it is like starting a small business and we were not given additional funds to operate it. And so we are within that 2-year period now. And it is starting up slower than what we'd expected or the consultant expected, but we are putting a very strong effort into selling that facility. But I want to let the panel know that we had tried to make the effort to operate that building on our own funds and not come back and ask for more funds. But with the economy the way it is, we have not been able to gain the business that we thought that we would on that particular pavilion.
What?
I think it will come, but I just don't think it's going to come as fast. Chair Smith.
What other state models are out there that we could look at?
Chair Smith, state models in what way? Are we talking about expo or fair? Are we talking about support? Or what are we... How do you want me to define this?
I'm and a firm believer in find somebody who's doing something very, very well and model after what they're doing. I wonder if there's, within the other 49 states, if there's someone else out there that we could... say, you know, boy, they have some good ideas, and they have some good ideas. Look at what North Dakota is doing. And I wonder if we could help try and bring all that together to find out what those, and I hate to use this term, but best practices are. But at the same time, you know, I feel a little bit of that frustration as well that we're now on third term of trying to figure this out. And so somehow I think this committee, it's incumbent upon us to find a solution this time. Senator Johnson.
Well, even Mr. Chair, going back in anticipation of today, I was sort of thinking about the prior committee meetings when there was considerable enthusiasm for trying to make suggestions to find a way out of the woods. And you had lots of good ideas, and I didn't go back and listen to the tapes or read the transcripts. But I'd love to know to what degree any of those got followed up on. Who of your partners that couldn't live without the fair stepped up? I recall a discussion back in room 177 or 174, a lot of conversation about some tangible strengthening of the partnerships with the county. I remember a discussion about the horse groups and what they might or might not do. And as I recall, although I'm reaching back pretty far, there was testimony on the record of folks that in the heat of that hearing were willing to come forward. And I don't know what the record would show at this point about who did. I mean, there is a certain universe of people who are passionately dedicated to a good outcome for the fair. Where are those folks? Other than, are we just holding a big festival generally for Oregonians that loses money every year? And I'd like to see some tangible demonstration that the planets circling in your universe are willing to recognize the urgency of a pretty dire situation, and what are their recommendations? And the conversation's pretty fresh in my mind that there were lots and lots of good ideas coming from both the public and the panel, and I don't know what happened to them.
Chair Smith, Senator Johnson, when you say the panel, are we talking the budget Ways and Means panel, or are we talking the task force?
I was principally thinking the Ways and Means Committee, but I presume there was a work product from the task force, too. And to the degree that suggestions have been made and vetted or pro forma to see whether or not they would yield positive results?
Chair Chair Smith, Senator Johnson, actually the task force, their strategic plan is in your book, and the summary of what has been accomplished is in there also for that. So just so you know that that is in there.
But I'm kind of focusing on questions and suggestions made and answers and programs implemented or reviewed and rejected for whatever reason. I remember we spent a lot of time focused on the horse community. What has the horse community done to help the fair in what really is the 11th hour for the fair? I mean, at least in some people's view, this is pretty dire.
I don't know. Do you want an answer now?
No. I wouldn't expect you to have an answer now, but just some demonstration that in that universe of people that you think of as your natural partners, who's doing what to throw out a life raft?
Okay. Why don't we keep moving forward?
Okay. I'm almost completed. The next item on page 21 is the reduction list, the 10% reduction, and we've summarized those by primary, secondary, and expo. And probably the key point here is, and you know, some things I will not be able to quantify, it's the chicken discussion again, but if we get rid of certain things, it will impact revenue. But for me to quantify how many people won't come to the fair because the chickens aren't there, I can't quantify it at that point.
Senator Johnson.
Did you at all look at any of the programs? I was looking in the back at one of your appendix where you list out a bunch of the things. Carnival, food concessions, commercial exhibitors, artisan fairs, amphitheater, Familyville. Mm-hmm. Did, when you were preparing your reductions, instead of these have the appearance of being a little bit across-the-board reductions. Did you look at any specific programs in your menu of offerings that you knew were not performing well or were showing bad trends when you could just get rid of the whole program?
Representative Smith, Senator Johnson, I looked at programs. What I had to do is look at them in a different manner. I had to look at them in a way that which programs during fair time bring the least amount of people to the fair. And so what I did is I looked, and I can't say, there was probably one other that I did not include here, but I got, the last time I kicked him out, I got named Rogue of the Week at the Willamette Weekly, and that was the beer department. But I tried to look, and when I eliminate various programs, I have to look at which ones have the least amount of impact to the fair. So you'll notice in here, wine's out, even though wine is very prominent in this state. The art and photography is out, because I had to think, you know, if I compare and I look at livestock's probably one thing, it's probably the more expensive thing that we do, but it probably brings more people in because you don't have a lot of the urban population having that contact.
Is it possible to take this discussion and put it into numbers?
Chair Smith, what numbers?
You know, I guess what I'm struggling with, committee, is I'd like to see, you know, here's how we generate our revenue, here's how we spend our money, this is the difference, but we're doing our best to earn this revenue, we're doing our best to control our expenses, and unfortunately, this is where we are at the bottom. Mm. And now you guys decide, have I done a good enough job in A and B to justify paying C? You see that?
That would be very helpful. And I think we've all asked the same question.
You just asked it. You just asked it very well. Make sure, it's worth saying again.
Is there a way to break down for us on maybe on an annual basis, here's the revenue we bring in every month.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Break down. Then on a monthly basis, here's how we spend mm-hmm. the money we bring in.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, here's the gap at the end of those months, and here's some months when we have positive. I mean, we show the cash flow, how the money comes in and how it goes out,
and then walk through with us, this is how we earn this revenue. You know, we have a great marketing lady who goes out and pounds the pavement and makes the cold calls and does this and that to bring the folks in. Here's what we could do to help that position. And then here's how we spend the money, et cetera, et cetera.
A subtext to that would also be the opportunity, because I'm going to guess personnel is one of your strongest, or your largest costs, would be a chance, particularly if you broke it down by salary, to see exactly how much is your custodian. I'm thinking again back, and I can't help but look in the audience and see managers of very successful fairs, and knowing how heavily they rely on volunteers. That isn't going to translate over into this discussion very easily, but I think it would help us have a deeper understanding of exactly what your costs are.
Chair Smith, Senator Johnson, I can do a very intricate breakdown of the salaries that we have there, and also probably even the temporary workers that we use there.
I think part of the struggle we're having is you're a market-driven agency, and we're thinking here in terms of seeing cash flow numbers as if we're looking at a business, and yet you're receiving financial information from a government perspective. And so we're struggling with how to take what you may know and figure out how to put it into language that we're envisioning. And maybe I'm wrong with the rest of the committee. That's how I see it.
Well,
Representative Avakian.
And I just because we are creating a record here, and because you are a government program, not a private business, it is important to me that along with that financial information, to have you justify the mission and why the mission should exist, as I described earlier. Because as I go through figuring out who should get money and who shouldn't get money, that is as important to me as your bottom line, positive or negative. Now, what I heard implicit in Chair Smith's request to you, too, and please correct me if I heard wrong, was that this financial information that's being requested isn't to prove whether you have a positive or a negative balance at the end, but to prove that your methods of accounting and use of your money are done well,
right,
by an appropriate financial model. Not that the result at the end needs to be positive. I think we all know it's not going to be.
Okay.
I think that's fair.
Fair enough.
Very fair.
Yeah, Chair Smith, the cash flow is no problem at all because we do those on a monthly basis.
Perfect.
And breaking it down. I do want to say we will do the best we can on the expense end, but where we start blending fair and expo together, we won't have a very distinct breakout because of the nature of the work and the timing of the work.
Well, what I'm going to do, I'm going to exercise a little prerogative of the chair here. What I'd like to see is here is the revenue we bring in every month.
Mm-hmm.
Here are the expenses we pay out of that,
right,
and be able to show the difference. And I'm going to assume there's going to be some months where there's some real gaps, and other months have to carry those over. And then what we can do is just go through those and maybe walk through it and have questions asked.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Senator Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just so I'm on the right page here, if we look at the pro forma 0507, and you look at the total revenues, which are operating revenues plus subsidies, and then subtract out your operating revenues, I see a deficit of approximately $6.6 million. And then I see a debt service of roughly $5.3 million. Would I be correct in assuming that you have an operating loss of $1.3 million and we're not even covering debt service?
Chair Smith, Senator Morris, I'm not sure exactly where you're at.
Well,
which document are you?
I went into the governor's balanced budget.
Okay.
Looking at a total, what I would consider your total revenues plus subsidies of roughly $19.1 million. Am I off base?
No, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, what I was going to tell you is that the governor's budget does not reflect the current revenue shortfall that is projected, and so you are off by a magnitude of a couple million dollars.
In addition to the 6.6?
Well, when you did your calculation and you went
through and you identified the debt service and then the gap of whatever it was, 1.3 or whatever, that was the general fund subsidy that was estimated, and at current projections, that's going to need to go up to about 3.6. 3.4? 9? Okay, I wasn't sure exactly.
Okay, so we have a revised pro forma.
Right.
Are we covering any measure of debt service?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there's $4.5 million. I don't have have it in front of me, but it's we are paying debt service through the lottery for the state fair. So they are not being requested to generate the revenue to pay the debt service on the lottery back bonds.
Okay, thank you. That's exactly my point.
Right.
Is that from an operational standpoint, Mr. Chairman, is that we're not even covering our debt service, plus we have an operating loss of not $1.3 million, but 3.3, or
3.9.
So, it would back up and really call into question the adding the debt, these lottery backed bonds. I mean, that's fungible money. Mm-hmm. And it's, we have a business enterprise that, by all standards, is something needs to be restructured. Either that, or we just come to recognition that we're going to subsidize our state fair to the tune of 5.2 plus 3.9. That's, $9 million plus, $4.5 million a year. I mean, that's what
Mr.
we're facing.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in fairness to the fair, there was never the expectation when those lottery bonds were issued, there was never the expectation that the fair would generate sufficient revenue to pay for them. It was undertaken with the understanding that a significant portion of it was to correct the failure of the state to assist with the maintenance of what are actually state facilities over that decade when the state was not contributing at all towards fairground facility maintenance. So to that extent, the state has proceeded to issue lottery-backed bonds for both maintenance and new facilities at the fair with the understanding that the state fair would not generate revenue to pay for it. At issue is really the increase in the general fund operating subsidy, which was not anticipated.
Why don't I... You have just received this information recently. Would we have two members on our committee who would be willing to work with Robin and with the state fair folks to go through the financials to get a better understanding and to come back and talk with us? Senator Morris?
Sure.
Representative Avakian? Would that be possible? And then have the four of you come together, work through the financials, and report back to us on what you see.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, if I could suggest, that might be something to that would be appropriate to do as we move into the phase two schedule.
Perfect. Perfect.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Chair Smith, I think the only, there's probably two pages left. One is the policy and budget. We've had somewhat of this discussion at this point, the fact that we're seeing reduced or leveled revenues for fair. We're seeing reduced, although we're seeing an increase in expo, it's not going up as fast as what we had hoped that it would. And we have seen a substantial increase in expenses over the last year. I looked back and we've had about $550,000 in increased expenses in a 12-month period. So with that, it does beg the question on the governor's recommended budget, the fact that we need, there is a policy decision to be made here. And so I just needed to put that out on the table, and it's already been discussed. The last page deals with agency plans and investments. There was an issue in September eBoard. There was $600,000 in additional interest that was brought forward. And we had approval at that time to use that for taking care of a couple of buildings that had some structural issues, putting more seats in the pavilion so we could fully rent the facility. And then there were a multitude of other things in there. All I want to do is bring out to this committee that in that e-board, in the November e-board when it was pulled back so we could pay off the revenue bonds, that it is stated in there that this committee needs to make the decision as to whether to use that money as it was intended in the September e-board or to use it to pay debt service on those lottery bonds. So I'm just bringing that forward. And also ask for future investments. I would have to go back to the facility master plan that was developed by the task force that talks about the capital construction and the facility repair and maintenance that we had talked before. And that concludes my phase one presentation. Chair Smith, I would like some clarification. We've discussed an awful lot of things today, and we have an awful lot of information coming back. It would be very helpful to me to make sure that I have it defined exactly what we need and when you want, at what stage and when you want it back. If there's something, if we're coming back tomorrow, then what we would have, you know, ready by tomorrow.
What's the pleasure of the committee?
You know, perhaps, Mr. Chair, we could wait until the four of us are able to get together and we can coordinate whatever your subcommittee produces with the requests that were made, and that would negate having to put something together tonight for tomorrow.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we have them scheduled to come back. I believe it's sort of mid-April, don't quote me, for phase two, and that might be the optimum time to do that. And given the issues that are in front of us, it's my humble opinion that there's not much value in having them come back tomorrow because there's quite a bit of information that needs to be put together.
Senator Moore, Senator Berger, what's your take?
I think it's difficult for me when you talk about cost and all, when you just talk about utility costs being up. It doesn't mean, it means something, but I don't have something to tie it to. What's relevant? What was it and what is it, you know, what kind of cost? In your just daily life, you have an office manager and a book and an accountant, CPA, that keeps the books. So your CPA could just produce whatever we need, right?
Chair Smith, Senator Verger, we can produce whatever you want as long as the state accounting system gives us where it's identifiable in the state accounting system, and then we run our cash flow from that state accounting system, yes.
Okay. Senator Morse.
Suggestion, Mr. Chair. For those of us in the subcommittee, I would like to meet in your office at the Exposition Center or wherever, and maybe if Robin, if we could go, and I'd love to just look at the data that you look at.
Okay.
How do you measure your success with financial reports? Just don't make copies. Just let us look at it and understand what you receive that guides you to make informed choices about how you manage the business. And just look at that data, and then we can go from there in terms of what we might want to follow up or the kind of recommendations we could make. But we could just be your guest at your home, and I assume you have a conference room. Or something that would pass as a conference room.
Chair Smith.
Those stupid buildings out there.
Yeah.
Where they do the barrel racing.
Chair Smith, Senator Orsh, yes, we do, but it's also used as the hallway, so it might be.
But anyway, just let us visit you. I'd like to do that.
That's terrific. Yeah. Does that give you a little bit of direction there?
Chair Smith, I'm sure that when the four of us get together, we will be able to define exactly what is coming back to the committee.
I think we've got a good committee in place, and we look forward to hearing what you come up with. Are we done for the day? Well, we truly appreciate you folks coming forward. We truly appreciate the value of the State Fair.
It truly is a treasure for the state of Oregon, and we're going to work through these issues and hopefully come up with a solution that a whole bunch of us on this committee can all work with, and Oregonians can also be proud of. So with that, unless there's any... Oh,
Mr.
Robin.
Chair, members of the committee, if we are done with the state fair for now, then there will not be any matter in front of the committee tomorrow.
Perfect. One thing I'd like to share with the committee is we are now going into the phase where we're prioritizing. And in the coming weeks, we'll be bringing you priorities. If you have issues in any one of the budgets that we've looked at, please get a hold of myself or Robin and share with us right up front where those are, so that way when we bring them forward to you, perhaps we can be a little more prepared and be able to address those issues rather than perhaps having to wait to get you information.
Mr. So. Chair, we're going to all be there Friday from 9 to 11. This Friday from 9 to 11 is the full Ways and Means and the subs.
Right, right. Okay. And I believe at that time they're going to be explaining the
is
process.
Is that in this room?
I believe so, Mr. Chair.
It's in this room?
Assume so.
Okay. Yeah. So, and I believe information has been passed out to each of you on how that process will work. So if you have any questions, I'm sure Robin or I guess Robin would be the person to go to on that.
Okay.
So I guess with that said, unless there's any objection, we're going to adjourn.
Thank you.